Great, thank you, Judy. It's 5:34, call this meeting to order. Judy, can you please call the roll and determine the quorum?
Yes, Ms. Black?
Here.
Mr. Chapman?
Here.
Mr. Crockett?
Here.
Ms. Gustafson? Ms. Hill?
Here.
Ms. Hummer?
I'm here.
And we do have a quorum for the committee manager.
Thank you so much. Is there any changes to the agenda? Okay. May I have a motion to approve the agenda, please?
Move forward the motion.
One second. Thank you, Wendy. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say nay. Hearing none, we'll move on to the next item, approval of the minutes. Does everyone have a chance to review the September 26th minutes? Any proposed changes? Not seeing any. Okay, may I have a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve the minutes.
And may I have a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Eli, abstain, is that okay? You don't have to, the Attorney General says you don't have to.
I said, you can say aye.
Okay, great. Yeah, you were.
I did last night, I was just saying the entire.
Great, any opposed, please say nay. Not hearing any. All right, that's passed unanimously. We're going to item two, public interest comments. All comments are to be limited to no more than 2 minutes per person. Comments may cannot be acted upon or discussed at this meeting, but may be placed on a future agenda for consideration. Judy, do we have any public comment? I don't see any in the room. Do we have any public comment in the room? Okay.
There's another meeting going on.
Oh, where is it? Is there?
We planned it well.
We had this on the ground. Is there any form of online reading?
Please raise your hand if you'd like to submit public comments. No public comment.
Okay, we will now go to discussion items. This is item number three in your agenda. We're going to have a presentation and discussion of transit principles and practices for mobility hubs, examples of mountain towns and compatible land uses, and work plan for public progress regarding project concept development and site assessment alternatives. And my turning over to you, Carl.
We'll actually turn it over to Danielle to introduce Jim and walk through this here.
Yes, so we have a guest that's here today in person. This is our first and last meeting. We just actually kicked off with them this morning, this afternoon, with the kickoff meeting for the consulting. Now we're here today with you. And Jim and his team got two of his team members online here. They're going to have a brief presentation. And then you'll want to open it up for discussion on how to start getting, you know, familiarity around mobility hubs and what it can be for our city. So let me take it from here.
Sounds good. We can go on to the next slide real quick. So thanks for having us. So this is kind of what we'll just go through, just a quick introduction of who we are, and then talk through some just general high-level mobility hub principles, just start sharing a little bit some of the ideas that are out there that our communities are sort of similar are doing. We're seeing other places, other mountain towns, other communities and places, and seeing starting to get an idea of what a mobility hub can be. And we'll just briefly talk through the scope and schedule of the project just so you're all aware of kind of what our plan progress is. Obviously, there's some flexibility that can change. And then community engagement efforts and how we're going to be going about that. And then the timing around after those. So, pretty much the next slide. So, just real quickly with the introduction, I'm Jim Henson with HDR. I'm the project manager for this project, and I'm part of our Connected Automated Vehicles Smart Mobility Program for the company, which involves mobility hubs and planning and for traffic and ITS. I've done a lot of work with Nevada DOT and all through the state of Nevada, helping them look at sort of ways to enhance mobility and operations, looking at all people when doing that. So really trying to think about you know, really what is the outcome of what we're trying to achieve. And I think that's a big part of what this project is going to be, is looking at what is it, what's the goal, what a mobility hub should be for Incline Village, and what does that look like? And then really then looking at how we identify the right place, locations to do that. So with me today, I have Jackie Dennis, who's in charge of community engagement, public engagement for the project. She's out of Las Vegas, and she is in charge of that for Nevada, for HDR, and Eric Clapper, who does a lot of advanced mobility planning, smart mobility planning, and set mobility hubs. So I think I'll have them both introduce themselves as well. Wanted to say something there. So Jackie, why don't you go first?
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having us. We are happy to be working with your team. Please know that I do have experience working with the RTC of Washoe, as well as Southern Nevada. And then in addition to that, I do work quite a bit with NDOT on a lot of the projects in Northern Nevada. So again, look forward to working with you on this project and appreciate being here tonight.
Good evening, Eric Clapper. I'm an emerging technology program manager at HDR. I will be the deputy project manager and the planning lead for this project.
Great, thank you both. Just say before we step on to the next, we can go to the next slide, but I'll say before we introduce that. I live in the Denver area, and I spend most of my time in the mountains when I can, and to go play in the winter parks. So I'm very familiar with, well, maybe not Californians and other Nevada communities, but we certainly apply to Texans and Floridians and others coming to our community to drive Oklahomans and Nebraskans and all sorts of people that come into the community. We have a slowly emerging mobility hub. I actually take the bus to the street or wherever I can and walk to downtown and invite to do those other things. So fairly familiar with using the transit, and that's a person who since those are the explanations that more spend more time there than I do at almost full weather probably an issue, but the point is I guess that so that they're starting to talk about this, you know, some of these things are pretty familiar to some of the challenges and issues that I think that Incline Village is facing. Some of the challenges, you know, that summer, just the teaching summer in the winter, and how you find a location that actually is more than just a transit stop, but actually the community building place. So with that, we're going to talk about, Eric's going to share some about mobility principles and model example. Like for this one, we have the Winter Park that's slowly emerging and serves a regional route, comes up from Denver for days, years. They call it bus thing. I think we're changing it to the ski thing or something like that. It's a fun name. CDOT Colorado DOT runs that. Bring people up and they can go from there, park there, and take a bus to the resort. Around that, there's a coffee shop, there's some office space, there's some restaurants and things that's right in the heart of our downtown. I'm right across the street, there's a brewery, actually right next to it as well. So, place where people can kind of connect and multi-family housing around it and other places. And so, if you're one transit line situation, your community, you can transfer to any of the others in that area. It's a pretty great example of what a mobility hub. It's just trying to grow into one, but it's a good example of what one can be. And I think as we start talking through this, we're going to be looking for those examples and share. You know, we're going to talk to some of those this evening, but throughout the duration of the project, really what mobility hubs in the mountain community can be, and what it can look like, and how we sort of revitalize or even add valuable aspects to the community and be a really positive asset. So, with that, Eric, maybe you can kind of run through the slides here on the mobility of principles and whatnot.
Yeah, sure. If you could go to the next slide, please.
Excuse me, could I just ask a question? And I apologize. This is purely procedural. I am having a very hard time hearing. I tried it on computer audio and it's completely distorted. So I tried calling in and now it's muted. I can hear the people that have pictures like me, but I can't hear the people in the room. I don't know if there's anything that can be done about that. So I apologize for interrupting, but that, I don't know if you're having trouble, Eric.
I am actually a little bit.
Okay.
We'll move them closer to the microphone.
Kara, is my voice clear?
Yours is clear. It could be a little louder, but it's clear. The other folks I'm getting, it's like an echo thing. Eric, help me, or Jackie. I don't know if you're hearing the same thing.
I was hearing an echo, too.
Yes.
We're in the Parasol building, and it's a little echoey in the first place. We've got some bathrooms in here, but it doesn't do enough.
Sorry for interrupting.
Go for it, Eric.
All right. Carol, can you hear me okay, though?
I can hear you.
Excellent. Okay. All right. So I just wanted to start by laying out a few principles that I like to apply when I'm working on Mobility Hub projects, because it can be pretty tempting to begin with amenities and sort of backtrack from there. But I actually think it's important to flip that series of questions. And so begin with, who are we trying to serve? What are their problems? And then start to layer in, what are the amenities and services that could solve these problems? And after all that, begin to think about sort of what their physical and infrastructure components will be. So if you go to the next slide, I'll just speak very briefly on this question of, who are we trying to serve? Obviously, there's a range of potential users. You have year-round residents, seasonal residents, first-time or occasional visitors. And it's going to really be a combination of these groups that we're serving. But there's also going to be a little bit of waiting involved. For example, year-round residents might be prioritized just because they need to get to work and essential services. And if you go to the next slide, what I've attempted to do. Oh, sure.
Just a second. Comment from Wendy.
Do you think we could add workforce, people who don't live in the basin and come here?
Yeah.
I know in 14 that study was very low, but I got to imagine now probably about 50% are people who live in Reno and Carson.
Probably more.
That's a great addition. Yeah, we can certainly add that. So this is just my hypothetical scoring. So I'm not saying that this necessarily applies to this project. But what you see is, you know, for example, everyone might could prioritize congestion heavily just because everyone experiences it. But on the flip side, year-round residents might really be the ones who see the long-term safety toll of crashes. Visitors and part-time residents, they'll probably be more likely to prioritize access to recreation versus to jobs. Occasional visitors, they're probably going to need more wayfinding, for example, than part-time and year-round residents. And so if you go to the next slide, this is now, oh, Carol, yes.
I'm just not sure what's the best way. Should we ask questions as we go, or would you rather we wait?
You can ask questions as we go, Carol.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay,
with that.
Can you go back then?
Sure.
Sorry. Okay, so part-time residents, I think, are also very concerned about safety.
Okay.
So I would color those dots for them too. Be my two cents.
Yeah, and we'll, you know, this is, again, my hypothetical scoring. I think we'll go through this in a little more detail and actually, you know, think through what each of these values are. But I think you're spot on about that safety comment for sure.
Yeah, and parking, you know, I think everybody may be interested in parking. It's just a thought. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Maybe we gas. Like you were saying yesterday, climate change, gas prices, environmental. Is that that be part of this? You were saying, not yesterday, but in the last meeting, about how the climate change and the impact.
And if I'm not mistaken, the public process itself, this is a good illustration of what will be an outcome of public process, will be this kind of ranking. You know, so that'll be part of the input. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but that'll be part of the input. So your input, what we get out of the communities, and ultimately define what bubbles are listed and what bubbles get listed by whom.
Or added.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
So,
I mean, this is good.
Yeah, our gas is, you guys know, is a dollar more a gallon. Everyone around us.
Yeah, I think sustainability in general.
Sustainability.
We're also thinking about if there's grants or other things in the future, the TTD, what I was going to look for, that right now, that's like every single grant. Is sustainability.
Yeah, sustainability.
So that idea of
you know, what the environment and the impacts are, so they're going to be important.
Because I know, like, with the workforce, a lot of them now, they don't have the housing here, but now they're reluctant to travel because of the gas prices.
Yeah.
The cost to commute versus the hourly wage.
Yeah.
Wage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, I think so. I think not only will these challenges shake out of that public involvement process, but you know, the who from that first slide is also going to shake out of that, because there might be things we're not even thinking about as this group. Okay, well let's move on. Oh.
I don't see any. Carol, you good? Okay, go ahead, Eric.
All right, so once we figured out the who and the what we're trying to solve, this is when we begin looking at the solutions that will specifically address those challenges on the previous slide. Just, you know, for example, you know, I'm hearing that workforce travel is important, so increasing transit service to access job centers might be one of the, you know, solutions that comes out of this. Amenities like wayfinding, parking availability, first and last mile micromobility, those, you know, might also be able to serve recreational travel. But as well, you know, to Carol's point, the year-round residents will probably also care about these types of solutions.
Dare I say something else?
Please,
I really
no,
would
interrupt away.
Love us to focus on services first and then amenities, which is sort of an add-on, in my opinion. It's sort of, what are the core services? What's the data support in terms of core service needs? What services do we need to provide either in Incline or elsewhere? And then the amenities are kind of like add-ons. Some of them are, you know, more important add-ons than others. And, you know, that can be prioritized, right? But just a thought.
If I could put
another nickel down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so actually, and if you go to my next slide, there's a sort of a way of parsing that out a little bit. Because each, you know, service or amenity will have its own requirements with respect to physical space, you know, what type of access it has for vehicles, for transit, for bikes and pedestrians. Each amenity might have its own power needs or communications needs. For example, you know, providing real-time parking availability will need, you know, some kind of communications infrastructure. And so I think this is really where that shaking out of, you know, here are our top priorities based on services, and then here are the amenities to support those services based on all of these different constraints that you see here. And so if you go to the next slide, I'm just going to talk through a short handful of examples. Two programs and three specific projects. So Colorado DOT actually has a mobility hub program. And one thing that's important about that is, so 10% of all Colorado DOT funding has to be dedicated to transit, and 25% of that funding has to be spent in rural areas. So I really think that this is a model program. And I have a couple Colorado examples. If you go to the next slide, one of them is in Vail. And this mobility hub, it utilizes a welcome center with restrooms. It has proximity to shops and lodging, provides access to a few different transportation services, both inter and intra-city bus networks. Notably, that eco transit you see there is currently being operated free of charge. And they also have some parking amenities, both related to real-time parking data availability as well as EV charging infrastructure. My second example is also in Colorado on the next slide in Fort Collins. And they have a downtown transit center. What you'll see is it utilizes similar baseline services. So they have a customer service center, restrooms, a waiting area. It also just happens to be where their administrative offices are housed. It also acts as the northern hub for their bus transit system. So this facility is really serving several different purposes. And this, it's actually one of three hubs that's in Fort Collins. If you go to the next slide, I just have one more program I wanted to briefly touch on, which is MTC in the Bay Area. And I realize that this may sound like an urban example, but they also have a lot of outlying mobility hubs. For example, one of them is in Napa, so sort of similarly situated from a size and tourism standpoint. But this program, what I think is interesting about it is they really provide a lot of resources. So they have an implementation playbook. They have specific criteria for siting and screening hubs, and they even have a grant application to fund infrastructure investments. So finally, I just wanted to tell you about one quick hub I mentioned in Napa. This is somewhat similar to the two examples I mentioned in Colorado. So they have amenities while people wait. They have proximity to area businesses, area amenities, but they still have, the local bus service. Interestingly, this one actually also has two that you don't see so often, Amtrak and rental cars. So it's really pretty ideal from the standpoint of being a good landing zone for visitors as they enter Napa. And so with that, I think, Jim, you're up next to talk scope.
Cool. Thanks, Eric. That was great. One thing that made me think about, when you talk about example of Napa, when we worked on the advanced mobility plan for Washoe RTC, one of the things was a big challenge was pulling people in from rural areas into Reno to do shopping and things like that into a city center. That first mile, last mile travel. And if one option they were looking at was like an e-car share, a smart car you could get in and take you to the grocery store, still come back so you can actually carry your food and stuff, not have to, then get on transit and actually use it. So it's not, just about walking, it's not just that first mile, last mile, how do you get to the school or to the whatever the location is, and actually be able to do the things you need to do. So
I can't hear a word you're saying. I'm sorry. Can we do anything about it? Is there a microphone we can get him closer to or something? I'm sorry. Well, one thing I can tell you is it's very directional. When you turn your head, it comes and goes. Okay. I'm sorry, I'm an old lady. My hearing's not perfect. But
so it was making me think about the Washoe RTC plan and how they were looking at ways to take transits coming in from other areas and making sure that they had that first mile, last mile travel. And rather than a rental car program, having a rental car facility, having the ability to do things like having a bike share, almost more like a micro-mobility sort of program, but with a small vehicle that people could use to get to the job or get to a store or to those locations. So that's what I was
thinking. Look straight ahead. You're better when you're looking straight ahead. When you turn off to the side, it goes away. I'm sorry.
You're good. All right, so the next item we have is, I can actually see for far enough away that my eyes can focus on it. So the next item was just really to go through the scope of work and an overview of kind of where we're at. So literally today we got the notice for proceeds. We're really kind of getting everything together to now so we can share where we are and what the plan is. We had a kickoff meeting today, so that was the first item that we had going into today was a kickoff meeting. One of them that I wanted to touch really strongly is that community engagement is a huge part of this entire project. So you'll see it starts from the beginning of the project, it goes all the way through the end. We want to make sure that the community is engaged,
helping us to identify the items that Eric was talking about. What are the services? What are the amenities? What are those pieces that we need to have? Identifying what those things are so that they can serve the community. But then as we start to develop a plan to get feedback, are we hitting the right things? Or what things can we tweak a bit to make sure that they're fitting what the community wants to see and provide that right input? So the city community engagement goes throughout the entire part of the project, and Jackie will be talking about that in a moment. The next piece, and probably the next that item, is really to identify those services and those amenities, is to understand what is that vision, what does the mobility hub look like in the climate, what should it have, what should be there, what are the services that need to be provided to support the workforce, to support the residents, the part-time year-round residents, to support visitors, to get vehicles off the road, but also maybe to create a community center and a place for the community. In addition to that, to serve as an impetus for that. Next is to, once all those pieces are defined, that vision is created, creating a toolbox that goes along with that, that really identifies, here's some of the pieces that can go together to make that work. Then what we're going to do is take that and look at what sites are available, or where are there possible sites that can actually achieve that vision. So rather than looking, we're not going to even talk sites until we look through what are the pieces that actually need to be there. So we start saying, well, we know we need to have communications there. Maybe we need to have power. We need to have spaces to park cars, or we need to have electricity for EV charging. So once we identify those pieces, what sites might be suitable or easily suitable to actually serve those needs, and identify a priority of those and to look at those specific ones. Then the next step is to come up with, well, okay, prioritize those and come up with an actual concept plan of what a mobility hub might look like on those sites, so that then that can sort of serve as the impetus to the next phase after this plan, which would be actually moving forward with implementing that. So at the end of the plan, you'll have prioritized the sites, or maybe a preferred site based off of those services and those amenities and all that input that we're getting from the community. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and go to the next slide and turn it over to Jackie to talk about community engagement. I think this is probably one of the biggest parts of this project, because really a mobility hub needs to serve the community. And so it needs to have a very positive and proactive input from the community to understand what are those needs, helps we can create the right vision. So Jackie?
Hi, thank you. When we talk about community engagement, one of the first things that we need to look at is make sure that everybody knows where we are in the process. So one of the first steps when we do any type of outreach is to make sure that our community knows that we're not under construction. We're simply, we're not even at a concept yet. We are soliciting their feedback and that no determinations have been made. And I think anytime any of us deal with either the media or the community, we need to echo that in the beginning of our conversation. And we need to probably recap with that as well, that this is a collaboration with the community. You are researching this with the community for the greater good. And again, where we are in the process is that we're simply, coming to them for their feedback as you had mentioned, Carol, services and amenities, and what is important to them, what are the needs of the community, that we are, no determination has been made, and that we are approaching this in collaboration. And then we also need to look at who are our internal stakeholders, and then those key community members and our partners. And we can go to the next slide. And I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but anyhow, so first and foremost, we need to make sure that they are aware where we're at in the process, and that no determination has been made, and that this is a collaborative process. And then we also really need to look at, we know that there are vocal groups. We also know that there are audiences who support the project, but their voice is not as loud. And so we need to make sure that in our due diligence that we are soliciting feedback from the entire community, and that we are making sure that everyone is aware of the comments that we're hearing, and to mitigate some of the negative opposition, if you will. but again, leaving no stone unturned and making sure that all audiences are heard, even those hard to reach audiences. So we can go ahead and go to the next slide. So here we have collaborating with the community, as I just mentioned. And then again, as we've heard in other meetings, building our partnerships. One of our biggest mouthpieces is going to be our community partners. And so first we start with our partner agencies. And again, this is just a sample of the groups that represent our partners. But then we also know, aside from, you know, the other entities that you partner with who are in support of the project and can help move pieces along, we know that then we also have our community and civic groups, and then our residents. And, you know, that's anything from HOAs and all of those groups. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I see a hand raised.
The biggest concern I have with my community, and I've lived and worked here for over 25 years, is a lot of people in this community feel like if you're not a homeowner, you're not a part of the community. And it really bothers me because there's people that have worked here for over 20 years and may not live here. And they're part of the community. They're the teachers. They work here. They take care of this community. So there's those people, but there's also the renters. People are like, if you don't own something, you don't get a say in this. And there's a lot of renters here that I also feel should be added to that. So I feel like when we look at a community is who invests their time and their energy and their life into a community should not just be a parcel owner. And that's, to me, what I've always found fault. And I've worked with it for 20 years. I've worked with the visitor bureaus, and I always felt like I don't see that as much with Truckee, or even in Colorado community, Avon and stuff. I don't feel where you're really, the community is a community. So I would really like added beyond residents, is residents, especially as we talk to people, that we have to find those people that are the loud minority, that there's other people that are part of this community.
Agree.
And that's really important to me, is to define that community as beyond a parcel owner.
Agree.
The workforce piece too, right? Like,
yeah.
Not all the people live here. But
or they recently had to move. Yeah. There's people that work for kids. They had kids here, sent them to school and everything, and they still work here. And then the renters. Like, I know so many people that rent here, and they're like, we never vote for board members. We never do anything because nobody cares. We're renters. And they're not necessary. Some of them are business owners, but they rent.
Yeah.
So business owners is another one.
Yeah.
I think is part of the community. I think it should be residents, renters, workforce, business owners.
And if I can just piggyback on, If I could just piggyback on that comment, the abutters to the property that has been looked at may not be where anything ends up. We don't know. We don't know exactly what we're going to come down to. But there are apartments across the street from one of the properties that's been tossed as a possibility, and they are not reached at all by any of the outreach mechanisms that I'm aware of. They are not owners. And many of them, I gather, English is not their first language. So, and there may be other pockets. I'm not minimizing other pockets. I agree with what has just been said. But I think, much of the outreach, the inviting to meetings and stuff, is based on parcel ownership. And I agree with you. I think we need to look more deeply into the whole community.
And we will work it.
Just to add on the stakeholders, how do we define, beyond I think what you guys just talked about, but the stakeholders that would be engaged. I see a sample group here, some that is probably accurate, some not as accurate. So just what is that process that creates the stakeholders of which we're going to reach out to? So is it a conversation that this committee is bringing forward? Is it a broader conversation? And I can add 10 different groups to that.
I think input from this committee is very important.
committee's here to help identify. I don't think that the consultant team or us are going to be limited to just dealing with committee members, but we may be checking with you on some other thoughts about that, but definitely identifying any help that the committee can add.
And I assume that would be some type of an outreach post committee time that you do for some years, you know, whenever that's in the calendar.
Yeah.
One of our first tasks that we're working on as part of outreach to develop public communications plan. And so, so we'll be doing that, sharing that with Danielle and Carl, and obviously that's going to have a list of folks that, stakeholders that we start with. But we're going to need your input. We'll get TTD's input, but also if you can provide input, we can add that into that as well. But we are working on that because mid-November we're going to have that ready to go. So.
And we did talk to having them participate in the outreach piece for the Washoe County Transportation Plan that's happening, so that everyone has limited time and want to take the opportunity to be the possible participate
right.
in that.
Yeah, instead of going on public meetings, because so many people in the community don't attend.
Yeah, and I know this is just a sample, but you have North Cal Business Association, which is a California Business Association.
Yeah.
We don't have the Incline Village Christian Plan Association. I know that.
Well,
that's
a little bit. North Cal Business Association is great to say that.
But where's Incline Village Christian Plan? This is
the
association.
Yeah.
She's doing a lot of work there right now.
Right.
I know this is a sample. I just wanted to know how to get that information into that. So.
Thanks for the school.
You
we're in the hospital,
the,
all, we've already pulled some Hyatt data. Send it to your list. Yes. We're starting a list. Don't send me a list. Let me develop one for you that you
perfect.
Can help review.
That
would be good.
Yeah, and just how does that work through that process? I'm not going to get hard to work on the timeline. When are we doing that?
Yes.
And the communication plan will come to this board in November.
That was just an overview, and this is a great discussion, and I love it because that is, quite frankly, our stakeholder list grows. Right? It's going to continue to grow as the project progresses. But one of the pillars of any communications plan is to be transparent, equitable, and inclusive. And so, and that is why it is a community effort. And as you mentioned before, it is everyone within the community, the workforce, and those who. Those who help enhance the community and live and work within it as well. So we want to make sure that we address all of those, as you had mentioned, not only the property owners, but those who, who rent as well, the workforce and the businesses. So we do work with the HOAs, elected officials as well, to make sure that we're, tagging onto their e-blasts or whatever they're sending out and disseminating for us. We can move to the next slide as well. So that, again, no stone is unturned, and in making sure that we are doing our due diligence in reaching out to those who are hard to reach and those who might not be so vocal, so that we are hearing feedback from all sectors of the community. And then on this particular slide, it's really important, again, for us to go back and make sure that everyone knows this is a collaboration. This is nothing. This is not being determined in a vacuum, and that the community is going to help shape the recommendations. So the feedback that we hear from them, which is so valuable that we do reach everyone, it's what are their concerns? What do they think the needs are? What are the concerns? And then potential resolutions. So as I had mentioned, so we have our stakeholders that we just mentioned, and then we also have project ambassadors, if you will, which many of you in this room would be, as well as some of our elected officials, but those individuals basically help us reach the larger community. So you may have a very vocal, you know, HOA liaison, if you will, and we need that person. So that is just an example. Essentially, you know, you have these influencers, if you will, and I'm not talking about social media, just influencers in the community who all have constituents and they have an audience, and that audience trusts them and believes in them. And so we can help educate them about the project, and then they can help spread the word for us. And quite frankly, we can also utilize them. They're very valuable because they can also bring issues and concerns to us so that we mitigate as much as possible, mitigate those coming up in a public forum, but hopefully we can reach a resolution and again, building consent and support for the project. And again, making sure that all voices are heard, but especially those that are in support as well, because we know that those that are opposed will be very vocal. So we want to make sure that mm-hmm. as much as we possibly can, that that is balanced, hearing from everyone.
Can I just make a quick comment? I agree with you about involving people. I think it would be helpful if we could drop this opposed, approved view of the world. There's a lot of concern in the community, as you know, about potential elements of this project. There's opportunity to build a program, I firmly believe, that will make sense. But I kind of think it might be nice if we could eliminate, I don't know, wording that sets people against each other, if I can use those words.
Certainly.
If I can just and make that suggestion. It's meant to be constructive. I know you didn't mean anything negative,
no,
but I do think, you know, we need to hear all of the aspects of the community's views and try to come up with the best solutions we can, some of which may be outside the community. I mean, I think that's something we need to consider as well. So that's meant in the most positive way I can possibly say it.
Understood. And I think we can move on to the next slide. And then we just have some of the tools. And again, I don't think it's shown on the slide, but these are just potential tools. This is, you know, again, we look at the demographic and the psychographics of our audience. Where do they get their information? How are they digesting it? Is it by mobile phone? Is it by radio? Is it by TV? Is it by word of mouth? What are our different target audiences? How do they digest their information? And then, quite frankly, what messaging really do they understand? Because we tailor our messaging to those different groups on those different platforms. So, you know, for some, we may have something at a local community event. For another, we may do a neighborhood workshop. And then for those people who don't want to come in and be part of a workshop, perhaps, you know, that's a smaller conversation at a different meeting that they might be having, a neighborhood meeting already being had. You know, there are telephone town halls as well for those who do not have Wi-Fi or aren't able to come to an in-person meeting. So again, you know, we really look at who the audience is and how to best reach them, and quite frankly, how to talk to them in the way that is most meaningful to them as well. So again, looking at the different audiences and making sure that, you know, one message does not fit all. So how you communicate with individuals, as you know, is very important. And again, fish where the fishes are. So, you know, where are they consuming their information, and making sure that our messaging is there and also carried in a way that that they will hear the message and can best understand it.
So
Jackie,
I'd like to say over to you. Yes. We have an Incline Village Mobility Hub website that we can get over to through, that the community already has been using and understands. So that's a really cool, it's already a tool that y'all can have. And then one of the things that is so tough it, for me working in government is that we ask for people to give us input, but we're not going to them. And so I don't know, I know that y'all aren't necessarily in Incline Village, the consulting group, but if there were opportunities for the community or for this committee to go out and meet people where they're at and give them an opportunity to give input, that, that would be another, like, grocery store, the park, the beach.
Right.
So,
and this is, and no, and that's a great point.
The Hyatt is good, the hospital, if they actually did employee meetings.
Yeah, right.
But also when we had the vaccines come out and they were doing like the community hospital, I was talking to them and they said the hardest population to reach in Incline Village was all the builders, the construction workers, the contractors, the roofers, the plumbers, because they don't leave work,
no.
Right? But if you look, that is a huge workforce here. It's all the builders,
yeah,
painters, roofers. And they said that they were actually trying to go to those contractors and get them to say, how can we get these people in? And they were actually changing the vaccine days to say, okay, is it Friday afternoon? This is the best day for workers to come and get them. So they said that was the hardest thing in this community to get people to come and get vaccinated. And people don't even think about them because they're all so many small businesses. But it's a huge, and they're driving those roads.
Yeah.
So that almost has to be another like thought process is how to reach all those builder people. And some of them live there, some don't, but they're definitely drivers.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, in addition, I think one of the things we have to make sure, and I'm sure you have some examples of work you've done in this space, but reaching those that English has a second language and how best are we doing that? I know, you know, when we look at different projects that are happening around the sustainable tile effort, the transportation effort, you know, we're really trying to think how can we get that audience. You know, we talk about the apartments that are near one of the locations that potentially could be on their own. There's probably quite a bit of English as a second language and how, you know, some of this isn't going to work. This traditional method type of thing doesn't work.
And,
I mean, can you go through the Boys and Girls Club? Can you go through the Sierra Family, Sierra Family Solutions?
The churches.
Right.
The second homeowners have got to reach too, a lot of them.
Right. We do have a team member that is based out of there as well and is based in Northern Nevada. So we do have boots on the ground because what you see listed is just a small smattering of what we will do with a project like this face to face. And like you mentioned, those hard to reach audiences, that's important. So, you know, and I'm merely brainstorming out loud, which is good and bad, but, you know, with the construction, and those in the workforce, perhaps we, bring donuts over one morning, that sort of thing. But my point is we go to where they are at on a time that, you know, if it's, of course, we'll have, talked to their employer ahead of time. And that's where, maybe we, I don't know that they're going to fill out a comment card, but we go to where they're at. And bring the information to them so that we make sure that we're hearing from them as well and engaging all members of the community.
I saw a really successful project of like giving people like frozen popsicles in parks to get some input. And so, like that idea of, going to people. So it sounds like you're already thinking like we are.
Thank you very much for that. I
Friday afternoon beer club. Yeah, exactly. The only one. I see your point on it.
Yeah,
reducing
the
vaccine. I think that's a good reason. Really highlights the need. Look at these different formats. I mean, if you're a teacher, don't live in Incline Village, maybe you live in Reno or Sparks, you're driving in, you'll go on a night and online, you'll respond to things. This could be really important. But maybe the way you're going to respond, otherwise you're not going to do it. You're not going to stay late to attend a meeting where you've already probably got things going on during the day while you're working. But you are part of the community. That input is really valuable.
You know, the other one I think is that seasonal workforce, and particularly the international seasonal workforce, the J4s, and a lot of they're going to be able to get through the larger employers because they're going to be the ones that are doing that. But you know, we'll get 10 of those living in a single house and, you know, trying to figure out how to get to North Star to go to work, you know, things like that.
So, and is that
within the express train? That's mostly mainline service because they're going mm-hmm. early. And so
no, I did not see they were even to get around.
Well, sure. Yeah. Okay.
Very good. I think we can move to the next slide. And you had mentioned the website. So that is something that's more internal for between us but anyhow. So we are looking at the current website and looking at, you know, do we repurpose what is there and the content. So just know that is something that we've looked into. But I, at least the education piece, you know, we're not coming to the community with something that's brand new. The website is out there and, you know, the majority of individuals are aware of that. So again, when we do engage them, I think it's important just to recap that, you know, we do need to make sure everybody knows where we are in the process. So we start our conversation to the best of our ability, ensure that they know that we are collaborating and that this is a collaborative process really shaped by their feedback. So which is why it's so important that we do reach all audiences and leave no stone unturned in our communication mediums and platforms and in reaching the different audiences, which is a great effort. And there will be challenges, of course, there will be, and you know, with more information and the open lines of communication and with project ambassadors. Again, you know, we can engage the majority of the community and come to the most successful outcome for all involved.
So I think that's the last.
Yes.
I think that's the last slide. So I don't know if there's any other. I said this is really just an introduction to the committee to know what we're planning to do and how we're going to start moving forward. To use some of the things we're starting to think about, you know, start sharing some of those examples about building up so that you can all be informed of what opportunities and possibilities are out there. Really just start to dialogue. We have that open line of communication with you all so that we can really get that important information about the community. This has been a great, I think, just discussion overall this evening. So today, other items
being this came up a little while ago, so I would like to talk about, you know, what we're going to try to do is, I don't know that the consultant team will be here at every meeting, but we want to be able to provide information to the committee each and every month. And so as we look to November and December, our last Monday of November is the 28th, which is the Monday after the Thanksgiving holiday. I don't know how that fits for everybody, but I wanted to check with you all. And December is a little more problematic because that's the day after Christmas, the 26th. So I think right now those are, in the next 2 months, those are, you know, whether we got to do doodle polls or whatever we can. I just wanted to get that on the table so that we can kind of plan for what we're aiming for here and getting the next agendas done, et cetera.
So, Carl, you're suggesting the Monday after Thanksgiving?
Well, that right now, Carol, we are regular schedule would be the last Monday of the month, when this case for November would be the 28th, which is the Monday after the Thanksgiving weekend. And so I don't know, just getting a flavor here for everybody. I know for Wendy, it doesn't work. And if we need to look for another day.
If it works for everyone else, I can.
It's not good for me, I can tell you that.
It's not good for you, Carol?
Is it the whole week that's bad, Wendy?
No.
Is it that day?
That day I'm flying home, but I mean, it could change.
Yeah.
Carol, what, is it the whole week for you?
No, it's Monday and Tuesday. I have to move myself from one place to another on Monday in order to do something that's already scheduled on Tuesday.
Yep.
Can the group, and obviously we can do some follow-up, but can the group do the 30th? Is that Wednesday?
And actually, I'm sorry, it's Tuesday morning I'm booked, so Tuesday evening would be okay, but I don't mean to, you know.
Well, I can do Tuesday evening. No.
John can't, Wendy can't.
Monday or Wednesday, right?
Well, what about Wednesday?
Fine.
Wednesday the 30th?
Yeah.
What about you? I'm okay.
All right, I'm gonna put it tentative on my calendar. We just say Judy from having to do one more unit. It's all we can do, I'm so sorry. So.
And then December 26th, right?
And then December, yes, so let's move on to December then.
I'm sorry, I have to put my hand up as the grandmother whose kids come to visit infrequently, and that's when they're here. That's school vacation
well,
week. You guys must have, some of you must have to do it with school vacation week. And the meeting will survive without me, but I can't commit to anything for that week between Christmas and New Year's.
The
19th,
and it sounds like a lot of folks.
Isn't that the 21st? Oh, no, I'm in the wrong month.
December.
December 19th.
Would the 19th work for you, Carol?
I'm just looking. I would think so, but hang on. November.
December.
That'll only be like.
I know, I'm trying to get my calendar to December. I apologize. Yeah, the 19th could work fine. That whole week before Christmas is fine.
Okay.
Is outreach plan done in November? I think there's going to be some time for them to be gathering.
Okay.
Just push to January.
Is it? Yeah.
Just push to January.
So January the 30th. Which is then skip the 19th of December.
Skip December.
Okay. Most meetings skip December.
We're just very committed around here.
Well, yeah. But we're hoping we're going to be snow, you know, stuck in our homes.
Okay, so January 30th.
That's the time of week.
Will be the.
January 30th is fine. What happened to December? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that whole conversation.
What we were talking about here is that December 19th is only like 2 weeks after the November meeting.
I see.
So not a whole lot's going to develop. So we're talking about skipping December and going to January 30th, which would be our last
fine.
Monday of January.
Okay. You could also have two meetings in. You could also think about two meetings in January. I mean, I'm not pushing. I'm just making ideas. That's all. Because you could have one the second week in January, and then the end,
four weeks
apart, 3 weeks apart,
whatever.
I would just schedule. Yeah, two meetings in January is going to be helpful.
Okay.
And I know the first 2 weeks. I mean, I know the second week of January is. TRB, the Transportation Research Board meeting in DC, so most of us will all be there. So I think that's probably not.
Okay.
It'd be better to.
I think the most valuable input will be on that community.
Yeah.
Yeah, outreach plan, and we can have that prepared for you to provide those input on that.
And I think that kind of was huge.
Yeah, I think
and then we can start working some more. So
yeah.
Which is really what we'll have a meeting and then we'll go then.
So, who puts together the community outreach plan? That's you two collaborating?
Yeah, they'll draft it and then I'll provide feedback.
And then we'll bring it to you.
And then we'll
final
work.
Yeah.
So, I'll hopefully do the touch
Sure, can I ask you another question on the scope and schedule? So determining scope and amenities priority and then then analyzing and looking at locations. I almost think that the location may just determine the scope and amenities. So if it's something closer to a town center, that's going to have different needs than if it's outside the town center. You know, outside the town center may be more prioritized with parking lot or vehicle charging. Something in the town center may be more retail, bike parking, bike share, things like that.
I don't disagree. I agree. I mean, I think that as you look at network of mobility hubs as a long-term vision, that network is going to have different types of mobility hubs in different places. I think the focus of this is an inclined village mobility. So what does an inclined village mobility hub or hubs look like? That's the important part of what we're trying to say. What would that be? So we could pick a site and say, at this site, here's what a mobility hub could be, but that's not really the intent of the project. The project was to identify what would a mobility hub, what would you find a mobility hub concept or concept for what that was, what does that mean for a defined village? And if so, then we identify the site. So I don't disagree with you. I think it probably both have the right sort of way of looking at it. Certainly a mobility hub at the bottom of Melrose Highway, Reno, is going to look different than a mobility hub in a defined village, because of the nature of what it's trying to do. So part of us is also deciding what is it that we want this mobility hub to do.
And who is it going to serve?
Who is it going to serve? Because to your point, where we put it, identify is going to change.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, well, if you get to the hub, then how do you get to where you need to go? That's what everybody keeps asking me.
I think the other thing that kind of falls into what John's talking about, I hear a lot of conversation about, well, what we should do this, we should do that.
Yeah.
And in reality, a lot of that this and that is happening. There's just the education that hasn't come forward to the community. Yeah. There is a large catchment lot that's included that's in that I-320 plan. There is a potential lot, maybe on a map of site or somewhere. Yeah. Those are those different plans that are out there, but that education hasn't come out. So part of this outreach also has to be an education about how this piece fits in the broader community. Do people know there's a 500, whatever that number is, 500 lot, parking lot, potentially planned for the top of Schooner.
Right.
That would capture that Schooner traffic. No more parking along that road.
Yay.
That would drive those people.
That's why I'm on this committee. Yeah. No more parking. That's 28. It's not my plan here.
I think 500 total on 38 Road between the expanded two lots of Chimney Beach.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if that includes the inside lot, the trail
still
part, but
I think there's a lot of misinformation out there too. There's a lot of misinformation out there too.
So how we educated people, folks in the community, here's what we're talking about, here's how it fits into the broader piece.
Talk to the prioritizers. What are the
goals? Yeah.
If I could just jump in, the one thing I'm very worried about here is we're jumping to solutions when we don't really know what our problems are. Now, I know there's been a fair amount of work done, and I know there is some existing data. It's old, we know that. It's not easy to get new, but we need to think about it. And I don't think that's part of why I went to services. And yes, I understand that services and location have an interplay. I get that, and amenities too. But until we have data, who's coming from where? Where are they trying to get to? How often are they trying to get there? And what would be the array of solutions that might make sense? We really are in no position to build a program. So I'm pleading for a data in service to really look at, answer some of the questions that we've all asked in the last few meetings, get detail about what we do know, figure out what the gaps are. I know it's in the consulting engagement. I understand that. I don't know exactly when. But you can't build a program until you know what problems you're trying to solve. And you don't know what problems you're trying to solve until you have data to really assess what is. And we don't have that today, as best I can tell. We have some, we have elements, absolutely. And I've been through it in fair detail. But we don't have sufficient data to build a program. And until we do, we're in no position to plan a program. I'm sorry, I don't think so. I mean, I trained in quality improvement in a completely different arena, but it was the basics are the same. You build your program based on data. And I haven't seen sufficient data yet to build a program. The other thing I wanted to ask you all to do, among the places you're benchmarking, would you please kindly benchmark Hallstatt, Austria? It's a small town, like Inklein, which is a village. It is sandwiched between mountains and a lake, like Inklein. And it has built, it has a huge tourism influx, much more than Inklein. And it is has built a nested transportation system, which includes intercepts outside for incoming traffic and a variety of other interventions. It's a very complex program. Hasn't solved all their problems, but it has made major impacts. And so I would ask, there are probably a million other places you could benchmark as well. But that one just struck me. It's also interesting for those of you who have children or grandchildren that might be interested in Disney Frozen, which I had known nothing about, but I guess it's a movie or something. I don't know, video, movie, I don't know. But anyway, it's supposedly the town where it's set. I don't know. But it just struck me as an excellent example. So if we have a lot of day visitors, just as an example, I mean, I'm not minimizing any of the other components people have talked about. It's all important. But if we have a bunch of day visitors, which we certainly do in the summer, coming to get to either to Inklein, but most of them aren't coming to get to Inklein. They're coming to go by Inklein to get someplace else down on the corridor there. Where do they come from? How many come? And where do we need to get them to? And can they be accommodated where they want to go? Which some can and maybe not all of them can. And what's the solution? The solution for the majority of them may well be an intercept that is well before Inklein. And that changes how any kind of mobility program in Inklein will look. So that's what I'm talking about. And I will now stop pontificating and thank you for listening. But I can't say it any other way. It's a basic tenet of any kind of quality improvement project. And that's what this is. This is improve the quality of transportation for the community and for the visitors and for the people who come to work in the community. And without data, you cannot, if you get a successful program, it's just because you're lucky. We need to have the information to build a successful program here. And thank you for listening. I apologize, but I just think this is just so critical. I was disappointed that this was the introductory presentation. I was hoping today would be the data dump, but okay, it wasn't. It was a good introductory presentation, so thank you. But we need data, and we need data that can help us build a program. So I thank you for listening.
I actually disagree because I think this presentation is great. I'm really excited because we are going to collect data on who we are trying to serve and what the transit challenges are in this community. And we're going to pair that along with all the work that's being done in Washoe County and the past work that is done by TRTA and CTD. And I think we're going to do a great job of figuring out where we can have a transit hub that will build a community and revitalize areas. Any other comments on the board?
Thank you.
Actually, Alexis, I just have a question. I asked a bunch of questions last month. I've gotten no answers based on the existing data. When might we see some of that information, perhaps?
Oh, yeah, you're going to post it on the site or something.
On your, yeah, what I'm going to work on is getting, I don't think you'll be satisfied with it, but... I will gather up some of the background work that was done for the plan that is shared with you the last meeting before, in articulating what led to our corridor plan and the connection, you know,
and the cell phone data that was used at that time, and make that available. It's not going to, I don't think, though, like I say, it's going to satisfy what you're looking for. We do have some newer information that's coming together. We were talking to the gym about it, as well as Amy of Washington County. We're looking at it with our short-range transit plan to see what can be updated there, but especially relevant to origin and destination like you're talking about.
Good.
But we did use that kind of data to establish our long-range transit plan back in 2017. That's what we relied on our consulting group at that time to do, using cell phone data. It was amazing. But, you know, I think my sense from what you keep talking about is you want to see and have your hands on all the background info, and I'm not so sure that I'm going to be able to provide that for you.
Just as an example, Carl, and maybe, you know, I'm sorry, I just don't get it. I can't tell from the data I've seen where the day visitors come from and where they're trying to get to. My guess is a lot of them in the summer are trying to get to Sand Harbor, but I don't know where they're coming from and where it might make sense to intercept them, as an example. Okay. We also know that there's been a 600%+ increase in short-term rental volume over the years since that data was collected. That has to bring vehicles that are trying to get somewhere, maybe during the day. They're not day visitors. They're longer-term visitors, many of them. So those are the questions I just don't see how we're going to make a program if we don't have some answers to. And
should
we are at the beginning of the process, and I think we can gather a lot of that.
Good.
What did you
just, you know, from a visitor perspective, you know, we do a lot of work in cell phone data. I know TRPA and others, and TT may have been using Streetlight.
TRPA uses Streetlight.
Yeah, we were using Arrivalist, and now we're moving to Datafy. But it isn't exact either. I mean, none of it is. I mean, we have all the data that we got for, say, the TARC Connect. I look at that every month, every 2 weeks, we look at that, the heat maps. That's actually where pickup and drop is. But it's not, there's none of it's going to be exact. I think there's a hunch, and yeah, we have to answer the hunch. And you could drive down Highway 28 in the summertime and know exactly where people are going.
So traffic.
Things like that. Yeah, exactly. So I think there is some data out there, but I don't think any of the data is going to be so conclusive that's going to tell us exactly what we need to do. I mean, obviously, we have transit professionals that work both in the basin and out of the basin, you know, that have been dealing with this. Yes, data is important, but I hope we don't have data paralysis where it's all about the data, only the data, because again, the data is not going to be 100% accurate. It's just it won't give us the full story. It'll give us direction. At least the data that I see from visitors, I know where our visitors, you know, are coming from the standpoint of where are they visiting from our website. You know, certainly, you know, have a good indication of folks who are in the market based on cell phones and where we have gone to market to them. And do we see that same cell phone that came out of Houston is now in Tahoe? So, yeah, it came from Houston, it came to Tahoe, and they flew most likely. Did they rent a car? Probably. You know, there's some assumptions that do roll into this conversation.
Well, and I think this is a good conversation, but we're not agendized for this, so I feel like we've kind of taken it. And Carol, I think that Carl, here's your request, and we're going to follow up on that.
We will keep working.
Thank you.
If we don't have any other comments from the committee, I'd like to go to the district manager report.
The only other thing I
have. Oh, public comment. Sorry. I'll do public comment on.
Please raise your hand if you'd like to submit public comment.
Public comment for the item or
item?
Okay.
No public comment.
Okay. Thanks. Now, unless you have one more question.
I just wanted to take the time to thank Jim and his team for
working.
We got a hold of them last week about putting together a presentation for this. So they had to get going on it in advance of having the contract signed. So I appreciate it, and it's usually our practice to try to have presentations within the agenda, but we weren't in a position to do that. So you know, that'll
smooth out here as we go forward.
I was blown away. I agree. I'm excited to work with this team. Okay, next up we'll go to this manager report.
That was my report.
Okay. Item number five, committee member requests comments. Any other comments or requests for anything from the committee? Carol, do you have anything?
Oh,
what?
Oh,
Carol, do you have anything?
You're telling me? Not specifically. I mean, it's the questions I just finished asking. And the other is Hallstatt, Austria. I think it's worth at least a reasonable look, which is why I asked them to do that. I hope that was okay.
Yeah, I
think we need to go.
Yeah,
maybe we could go visit.
Exactly, that's not wonderful. Okay, that's not great. Any other committee member requests for comments? All right. Final public comment number, item number six. I think we have to meet here. Please speak to the owl. Thank you.
Hi, Carol. Can you hear me?
Yes. Am I supposed to say? Oh, you're going to talk. Good.
Oh, I'm just checking. See if you can hear. All right. Denise Davis, great presentation tonight. I have a lot of family in Colorado, so I used to zip around Larimer Square with my friend on the public transportation. I have ridden light rail from Englewood to Rockies Games. I have gone from the airport in Denver to Lakewood. I would have loved public transportation back in the days when I skied at Winter Park in Vail. I have a brother-in-law who's dependent on bus service in Colorado Springs. So I am familiar with public transportation, and I'm not opposed to it. I'm not even opposed to mobility now. I believe I'm the only person in this room who actually went around the apartment across the street from the old elementary school just to let them know about the East Shore Express service and let them know when the meeting was, so that if they wanted to go and make any comments for or against, this was their information. Most of them knew nothing about it. I even took a stab at translating the information into Spanish, did it on my own paper with my own ink on my own printer. I announced the mobility meetings and surveys at our community forum twice a month. So what is my problem? I continue to be concerned about the location of the proposed mobility hub. Why is that? Because for 8 years, I lived one block from that site when the school was in operation. So I am familiar with what traffic is like when something is happening in that site. I now live on this side of town, across the highway, from the parking lot for the East Shore Trail, which had a lot of concerns before they were built, and a lot of those concerns remain to be solved. We have tremendous parking issues in our neighborhood, and they were brought up before the project. They're still not resolved. And so I have a lot of concerns when I hear about, oh yeah, it'll all be great, because I've already lived through this. I'm still living through it. I lived through it before when I lived a block from that site. So I'm just asking HDR and whoever our other consultants are to take into consideration, we may not be opposed to mobility hub. We may have issues with the location. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other public comments?
Would anyone like to submit final public comment? No public comment.
Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you everyone for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I like really love Seattle.
City Hall. I didn't pick up on the city Carol mentioned as a also
Halsted, Norwood.
It's a hard part about that. So the fund grants public transit, transportation is a lot.